So can you tell me a little bit about your right hand technique? Now, obviously, people can't see this on the radio, but you're using almost all of your fingers, right? Some people play with a pick. Some people, Wes Montgomery plays with the thumb, but you're using your thumb, using maybe three of the other fingers. Are you using,
Yeah.
and used your pinky as well, right? All of them at some
I
point?
rarely use my pinky, but
Okay.
sometimes. I mean, for me, it was just chasing after a sound, and I always liked the sound of the fingers better than the pick. I started playing with a pick for about half my guitar life. I played with a pick exclusively.
And why did you play with the pick then?
It's just kind of what most people tell you to do. So I did, what was expected. And there are certainly advantages to pick. It's easier to project, it's a louder sound. It's easier to articulate fast, but there's something about the warmth of fingers. And also the thing that's fascinating about the fingers is depending on what part of the finger, like how close you are to the fingernail or how close you are to the bone of the fingertip or the flesh of the fingertip, you're going to get really different kinds of sounds. So there's a lot of sonic possibility. Actually, I've started even sometimes, hitting the strings with the back of my nails, like a flamenco guy would do or something. And I haven't really developed that, but there's a lot of options. You can use one finger to do a tremolo. There's just a lot you can do. You can play free strokes like a classical guitarist. And all these things are, at your fingertips. So I like it for the variety and kind of diversity of sound and just the overall warmth. And to be honest, it felt more comfortable to me. So that was a factor too. I just kind of quickly when I made the change, it started to feel better. Now, with that said, there's still some things that most good guitarists, who are good with a pick can do that are kind of challenging for me. So it's a little bit of a trade-off, but I guess I made my stand, and then I said, well, I'm going to live with the pros and the cons. So
Were there other guitar players that you looked at as a model for this style?
not really. I mean, it's not that different than how classical guitarists play, except I cut my nails off because I think on an electric guitar it kind of warms up the sound. The difference between steel strings on an electric guitar versus nylon strings on a classical guitar. And I guess I'm kind of going for something that's almost in between those tones. Like I want something that's a little bit warmer and woodier than what you hear a lot of times from electric guitar, but I still need to punch and cut. But probably, Wes was my role model for sound, and he's a kind of unusual freak, what he could do with just his thumb up and down and the fluency and speed and power. And I was never able to get that. So I started using my thumb more and more, but I could only get so far. But when I started, alternating between my index and middle finger, I could come pretty close to what I was able to do with the pick and also come pretty close to the sound of the thumb. So,
It's like an acoustic bass player. A lot of them play with the first two fingers.
It's not like I invented something that was unheard of or, kind of a really strange idea, but it's a little different than what other guitarists do.
So you're going for warmth.
That's it.
That's the word I kept hearing from you.
Some days better than others, but yeah, I want like a fat sound with some flesh, and I don't want it to be too pingy or harsh.
So you mentioned getting a chance to work with Michael Bublé, and most people know about Michael Bublé. He's on pop radio and videos, and the majority of Americans that are paying attention to media and music are familiar with him, have seen him. He's sort of a pop star at this point.
Definitely, yeah.
You wouldn't call him a jazz artist.
Definitely
Because
not, yeah.
he's right in there with all of the other pop stars on TV shows and things like that. How was that? That must have been a lot different working with someone like that than, say, the Clayton Hamilton Orchestra, which is just purely a jazz group. How did that differ? What kind of experiences did you have?
It was definitely kind of a culture shock for me. You know, a lot of like managers and agents and press and a lot of attention from the public. I mean, stuff that sounds almost cliche, but I mean, like walking off stage and have people like grab and try and touch your foot and stuff. I mean, it really was that, you know, like in the movies with, you know, like Elvis Presley or something like that was how we were kind of treated, which, you know, was really disorienting and kind of fascinating, like sociologically fascinating, just watching how people respond to stardom, you know. So being next to Michael and you know, doing all the big TV shows and these major concerts and stuff, and seeing like how people would behave around him, it was a very artificial kind of world, you know. And actually, I'm kind of empathetic sometimes when you see you know, these stars on the news and they've done just some bizarre thing, but I can see how you get there, because you live in a you know, like a hermetically sealed bubble where people are only going to tell you what you want to hear. And you know, to Michael's credit, he's a really good guy, and you know, I think I really enjoyed being around him and getting to play with him. And he's, you know, he's the thing that he really impressed on me, kind of by example, and also in conversations we had, was kind of the importance of being an entertainer as well as, you know, being a musician. And he, you know, he really takes that seriously, and he's always going to turn it on. Like, he's one of these kind of people where it's like impossible to not like him. Like, even, you know, on days when I was really annoyed with him, you know, or, you know, we've been on the road, like, he's just like, he's like genetically designed to be the most likable and charismatic person in the room. And that's, you know, I think he considers that his job. And, you know, I remember one time he told me something. He said, you know, when you're playing a solo, he said, look at the audience. And that's not something I ever would have done. I tend to be, you know, thinking about the music, but he was reminding me to pay attention to the people and put your energy outward, you know. And so I got more aware of kind of the visual part of performing music, and it was really important. I mean, they would you know, we'd have people from the record label and stuff scrutinizing how we looked on camera, which was very different than, you know, anything I'd thought of in the rest of my musical life. So
yeah, that's something, as you know, most jazz artists are not thinking about entertaining or the showbiz aspect,
right
or the visual aspect. They're just into themselves or their solo, or you know, other people just happen to be in the room observing. But
right,
yeah, I think it's important, you know, you're communicating with the band, but you have to communicate with the audience. I see where you get that now, because now when I get to play with you, you're aware of the audience, you're looking around, you're smiling. And that's
attractive
to people.
That definitely came from Michael. I mean, I think I naturally was probably always like that a little bit, because I'm happy when I'm playing mostly, but he kind of showed me that it was important to amplify that a little bit, because you've got to project your personality into the audience, you know, as well as the music. And it's important, you know. And this is an old school jazz thing too, you know. I mean, talking about how you dress and carry yourself, but people see you before they hear you, and that's important. But that was an extreme lesson in terms of that kind of stuff, presentation, how you talk to the audience. Buble is total master with that. I mean, he's just really, really funny and engaging.
Do you have a favorite performance or a venue or one of the TV shows that you did? What are some memories that you have?
I mean, the thing about me is I can say all this, but I'm a jazz musician 100%, and my favorite places to play are the, you know, the little clubs, and you know, when the people are right next to you. And you know, we would do concerts for 10,000 people in an arena, and there is something kind of thrilling about the massiveness of that. But you know, from a musical perspective, it's not really ideal. I mean, we would play with they call them in-ear monitors, so you don't really know how you're blending with the other musicians on stage, because you have a mix in your headphones that are also earplugs. So you literally can't hear what's happening on stage. And it's a, I don't know. I found that musically a little bit alienating, but it was fun. I mean, it was exciting getting to, like, you know, go on David Letterman's show and, you know, do the all the morning talk shows and stuff. And you know, you trip over Penelope Cruz when you're walking to your dressing room. And, you know, I mean, it was, all that kind of stuff, like, was a daily part of our lives, which was, you know, it was fascinating. It was a fascinating experience and fun. But for me, you know, my favorite places are to play are places like the Carytown Concert House or the Dirty Dog or Smalls or, you know, the Jazz Standard or Birdland, some of the larger clubs too. But I like playing clubs, small theaters. You know, that's when you really get the magic of the music going straight from you to somebody's heart, and you can see them and you're together.
Let's hear some more music. What else do we have today?
All right. Well, I've been messing with this Rodgers and Hart tune, My Heart Stood Still. I love playing standards because you just never get tired of them. They're great melodies, great harmony. You can play them forever. Thank you.
My Heart Stood Still. I'm curious, Randy, did you hear a recording or a performance of that tune at some time that caused you to learn that? Or
boy, I can't remember where I heard that first. I think that was one of those tunes that was floating around New York. But Kenny Dorham has a great recording of it. Barry Harris recorded it. It's one of those tunes that's common fodder for jazz musicians, and but it's not so overplayed that, you know, I can't stand to play it again.
So you're still performing all over the world, and now you've added to your resume, to your load. You're a professor now at Michigan State University, as you mentioned. How are you able to fit all of that in, and how do you enjoy teaching?
Well, I've been loving teaching, and it really makes everything make sense and kind of feel like a circle instead of a straight line that dead ends, because I've heard a lot of older musicians, you know, and I'm sure you have too, talking about, well, you know, kids today, they don't care about the music, and they don't know any tunes, and they don't swing, and, you know, I basically completely disagree, and I have so much proof of it with my students, because there's just so many of them that are so committed to the music. They're so aware of it. They're really sincerely putting their heart and soul into this. And it really gives me a feeling of great inspiration. And, you know, I work a lot with musicians who are much older than me, and there's a poignancy to that because you know that they're not always going to be around. And sometimes it can feel like, well, the music is ending, or, you know, it's just like I'm the last vestige of this. But, you know, since I've started teaching, I really don't feel that anymore. I feel that I'm just kind of a, you know, another link in the chain, and it's, you know, it's going to keep on going forever. And that's a beautiful feeling. And so, you know, when I'm with 85-year-old Freddie Cole, I really pay close attention to him, and I try and absorb the things he's, you know, showing me, and I try and pass them along. And when I'm with my students and we're training, I'm thinking about stuff I'm going to bring back to the gig, you know, when I go out on the road with Freddie. So it's, they really influence each other, and it's been a beautiful thing. Now, to answer your question, the scheduling thing is really hard. It's really hard. I have to say no to a lot of gigs, which is, you know, a bittersweet thing, but I think it's worth it. I like being at home, you know. I've got a son who's turning 4 in a couple weeks, and you know, I love staying close to home, and you know, I love being with the kids at school, so it's great. But you know, you've got to kind of be judicious about the stuff you pick, and you know, I travel a lot more during the summer than during the year, and try and go out on weekends, make it back in time to teach on Monday. It's a scramble, but you can do it.
How long have you lived in Michigan?
It's coming up on 3 years.
Was it tough for you to move back to Michigan from New York?
It was amazingly not tough. I mean, there were some grown-up type things, like I had never owned a house. And, you know, of course, everything starts breaking the week you move in. And so, you know, figuring out how to, you know, you've got to take the garbage out on Thursday night and, you know, just stuff I hadn't been thinking about.
Doesn't the landlord do that?
Yeah, right, exactly. You know, and getting used to, you know, driving. And I hadn't owned a car before, actually, ever. When I was in college, I didn't have a car. So getting used to that. But basically, I just like it better, actually. I like it. I wake up and, you know, there's birds chirping, and I don't miss the sounds of construction and
car alarms.
I mean, I do miss the close proximity to a lot of musicians, because, you know, I used to be able to just hop on the one train and I'd be at a gig in half an hour. And, you know, there were just thousands of great musicians on that little island of Manhattan. So I do miss that. I miss some of my friends, but mostly I don't miss it at all. I really, really like being in East Lansing.
You've got another original, I think, that you prepared for today, or that you told me about, our first dance.
Oh yeah. So this is one from my third record, Jukebox Crowd. And that record, I was kind of, we did a lot of, you know, kind of blues kind of stuff, and you know, some stuff almost doo-wop like. So I tried to write a you know, a simple tune in that kind of a spirit. So let me give this a shot.
Beautiful tune. Are you sure that's not a standard?
I tried to paint inside the lines on that one. And, you know, I think sometimes writing too is a, you know, there's a game part of it, which is, well, let me see if I can do something with, you know, this kind of feeling, like a 90s Young Lion kind of tune. Let me see if I can do something that sounds like it, you know, was written in 1950 and, I don't know. You know, play with different kinds of moods.
So that's from your third CD, The Jukebox Crowd.
Right.
And you have four CDs out.
That's right, yeah.
So tell us about the latest one.
The most recent one is called Soon. It's on the Detroit Music Factory label. And I'm really proud of this record. I got to record with, you know, two of my role models in the business, Rodney Whitaker and Greg Hutchinson. Which is, they're really, together they form one of the iconic rhythm sections of our generation, I would say. And, you know, I grew up listening to them with Roy Hargrove's band in the 90s. And, yeah, you know, this record was a little different from my other ones in terms of it focuses almost entirely on standards. And it was the first time I had ever recorded trio, which was... really an adventure for me, and it was something that I wanted to push myself to do. I think trio is a beautiful format for guitar because you hear so much, and I think I've spent most of my life leaning on piano players because they just dress everything up and add so much harmonic richness. So for me, it was a challenge but also an opportunity because you really hear all the tonal nuances of the guitar when there's more space. Yeah, so that was my thinking on this one, and I'm really proud of it. I think it came out well.
So we can find out more information about you at your website, randynapoleon.com.
That's right.
I just want to say thanks again for being here, Randy. It's really great to have you here to play your original music and to hear you in this solo format. Appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I'd love to hear you play something from the new record. Maybe play us out.
Well, this is the first track on the record. This is called Be My Love. ¶¶
Thank you.